YT Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect is sponsored in part by Bosque Home Services, heating, cooling, plumbing, roofing, and restoration services. 505-444-7200. That's 505-444-7200. Or on the web at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com. Bosque Home Services, locally grown, locally owned. Thank you for your support of KLYT and our show, ABQ Connect. Dr. Brian Nixon, who oversees education and publishing for Calvary Church, and he's an author. We've talked to him about his favorite thing, which is art. Well, maybe your wife's your favorite thing,
right?
Brian.
Right. Family and faith would, favorite. You know, obviously would come first.
And his grandson.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to take away from what's most important, but two books you've written recently, Tilt and Beauty and the Banana, are even part of the topic we're going to talk about
That's
today.
Right.
And you've brought in Jeff LaFever. Jeff, how are you?
I'm great, Jim. Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Just a little blurb about Jeff. He is celebrating 44 years as a professional visual artist. His career includes success as a freelance illustrator. I have no idea what that is because I have no abilities. I can draw stick figures. And he works in commercial advertising and the gift industries. His fine art is amazing and commercial photography. So, gentlemen, welcome to ABQ Connect.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Jim. It's always a pleasure.
It's good stuff. I don't have the IQ standards required for this interview, so but it is fascinating to me because I don't have any abilities when it comes to music or to art, which I don't even know why Brian talks to me because those are the two most important things to him. But, Brian, you've recently worked on a collaborative piece of art called Work, Study, and Pray. Give us a little background about this.
Yeah, well, this actually spawned from Jeff LaFever, and he'll give some more background. But Jeff and I have been collaborators for many, many years. And Jeff is moving into a whole new field in fine art portraiture. And what he was doing is he was looking for some individuals to work with him as he hones the skill on these portraitures. So I was one of the ones that I said, sure, Jeff. So he flew out from his home base in Las Vegas, Nevada, and spent the day taking pictures of me. And I'm going to let Jeff in a moment just really describe what goes into that. Because when I say taking pictures, it's not just your average picture. These are multiple exposure pictures. And I'll let Jeff, again, unpack that more. But he spent the day with me taking photographs, multiple exposure photographs. And then 3 months later, 4 months later, because that's how much work goes into this stuff, I get in the mail, just on Friday or Saturday, a finished work that's signed and additioned, and it's a piece of artwork, you know, from Jeff LaFever. So why I named it, or why we named it Work, Study, and Pray, is part of the process Jeff wanted us to go through as sitters, is these photographs, these portraitures, these fine art portraitures have to reflect who you are as an individual. So he had us fill out a questionnaire. He asked a series of questions. And based upon the questionnaire and his interview of us, he also took pictures of other things. So in my portraits, I'm with a mandolin because I love music. There's typewriters because I love writing. There's obviously images of faith, a Bible. There's images of Christ. And so he integrated all of this in the fine art portraiture. So Work, Study, and Pray, when I graduated with my doctorate, from Oxford Graduate School, in addition to St. Alcuin's House, I graduated, and St. Alcuin's was an Anglo-Catholic school. And so I was part of an academic order, a Benedictine academic order, and their motto was work, study, and pray. And I have found that that really does summarize my life. I work, I study, and I pray. I mean, that really is a nice summary. So when Jeff said, well, what summarizes your life? Who are you about? And I said, well, really, quite frankly, these three words. So he did a triptych, three images next to each other to reflect work, study, and pray. But Jeff, I'll let you really inform our listeners what in the world is multiple exposure photography.
Oh, that's a great question. Well, first of all, I got to say that with the portraits, they start with regular photographs. The multiple exposures don't come until I'm in my studio. Mm-hmm. But I need to get data. And some of that data is, what does the sitter look like? Besides, what kind of things does the sitter surround themselves with? People have a tendency to collect things that represent who they are, or at least have meaning for them. And I don't just want someone to give me a summation of themselves that they think they have based on their own identity of themselves. I want to really find out who these people really are, and how they think and how they feel and things that are important and meaningful to them. So part of it is like, well, maybe they're a car collector. Their car collection is very important to them, but they might be completely involved with something else, and the public knows them as something else. But personally, they're all about their car collection. Well, why? Does it have something to do with their childhood? Is it something to do with their parents? Is it a memory they had? So as I want to go deep into those kinds of things. I've known Brian for a long time, so it was easier with Brian than others. I didn't have to go as in depth because I already have a lot of familiarity with who Brian is as a person outside of his the public life, let's say. Mm-hmm. So I didn't even know that about Brian and the oath, but that came up in the course of it. So in the whole thing's a journey with somebody. So it starts with just a regular photo shoot so I can have pictures of themselves. With Brian and I, we went on a road trip, and we went to Taos. Mm-hmm. And I'm the guy in the car, stop, I want to take pictures over here. And so Brian's like, no, we got to get to, and I'm like, stop, turn around, go back. And we went back. I take a bunch of pictures of things, which would later end up in his portrait or in parts of his portrait. So the thing is a person will get a choice of one, but I might give them something like 90 to choose from at the end of it. So I have all these pictures. Then I go home. I edit them. I prepare them. I print them out. And then I start the multiple exposure process. So the multiple exposure process is I'll take a picture of picture A, picture B, picture C. The camera puts them together inside the camera as if it was a mistake where things got overwritten. But I've honed it down after 3.5 years to be able to formulate a compositional arrangement with that and knowing how it's going to be done and move it towards a result I want. And so, yeah. And so anyway, with Brian, it was like, well, here's all these things. And Brian was looking at it, and one of them had, the inclusion of lyrics from a song he wrote that were in it. And I'm like, I really like that. So I thought, well, Brian, take a look at these that are going to be your choice. Make a decision, narrow it down. He narrowed it down to 3. And then I said, look, you know, if any of these are inspirational to you, because I'm now appealing to his artistic side, which is another element I know of him. Someone else, I won't ask this because they may not have that element as part of who they are. I will ask them something that relates to them. But in Brian's case, a poem, a lyric, if any of these stimulate that with you, if you're inspired by anything, you know, write it down. Brian didn't know I was going to put him in the picture. But later I took what he wrote, and he gave me a lot. Like every day I was getting one of my... Yeah, but yeah, and they all got incorporated into his work, so the final one became a triptych.
Yeah, and I could read one of those poems later that was inspired by Jeff's work. But Jeff, I'm going to underscore for our listeners the whole notion of multiple exposure photography.
Okay.
Because, you know, a lot of people may see these images on your website, and we'll give that out later in the broadcast. And they may go, oh, well, he did all that in Photoshop. Anyone could lay over images.
But it looks that way.
That's
yes.
not the case. You do not go in and take these images in Photoshop on a computer. They are actually done with the photographer's eye within the camera.
Yes.
So they are, and so I wanted you to share the story of when you were applying for copyright images.
Oh, yeah.
And the copyright, the United States copyright person said, well, these are fine art. They're not photography, because they were assuming he did them on the computer as a fine artist. So he had to explain to the United States Copyright Office the process. And then they said, oh, yeah, these are photographers. So share that story.
You just explained it.
Yeah.
You just told the story.
Jeff, I do want our listeners, though, as you're explaining this, to understand, is this something that you want to be commissioned to do?
Yes.
Like if our listener says, wow, this sounds like a cool idea.
I absolutely. So the whole thing is about getting to know people and to create portraits of people. So if people want their portrait done, then absolutely they can actually do the commission.
And let me just get, because, you know, we're talking about art on you know, audio,
on
and people can't see it. So I'm just going to describe it, this work study prey. So in the first image.
Go to lefeverart.com while we're doing this.
Yeah.
I mean, you can look at this on the computer or your cell phone while you're listening to us. So it's LEFEVERART.com.
Yeah. Right. And what you'll see is...
Wait, hold on, one more. So if you want to see the portraits, though, because what they'll see there are the are my limited editions that are for sale. If they go to LeFevre.com, just LEFEVER.com.
Okay.
Then they can find in the about page where the portraits are at the bottom, and that's where all the portraits are.
So, what they're seeing in the work one, there's an image of me, and again, my face isn't clear. You really see other things.
Those are the kind of photos I like. Me too.
And I'm holding a mandolin, and then kind of like glowing lights are illuminated from all of this. In the study, you can't see me at all. There's skulls. There's what appears to be an accordion. And if you look closely, there's typewriter hammers. And then the third one, pray, which is the one that you could tell that it's me just in a prayer-like type position. But if you look closely, you'll see images of Christ, you'll see a Bible, you'll see typewriter, accordion. So all these images, all these facets were done, again, in multiple exposure photography, not on the computer.
In the camera.
Yeah.
So one of the things with the copyright office is, and I encourage everybody to get their work copyrighted if they want it protected. So it's, the copyright office used to have for photographers for unpublished works, they could register an unlimited amount for $55 per registration. They changed that to 750, which is still a lot, but photographers shoot way more than 750 images. For an artist, if they have an original work of art that has not been published, they can only register up to 15 for $55. So if I have 750 images that I want to register and I only want to spend $55, they have to be photographs. So I was registering my photographs, which look like graphic art, and the U.S. Copyright Office says you need to register these as artworks and only 15 at a time. Well, now we're talking $6,000 for registration. And I'm saying, well, but these are photographs. And they're like, these aren't photographs. And here's what we said before about portraits. People have an idea of what a portrait is. Mm-hmm. Well, these don't look like photographs. And they're like, well, they were made in the camera, and I'll show you the raw files. So the raw file is like a negative for people who use film. A negative determines that it's a photograph, not the print, because that could have been doctored or whatever. So whoever owns the negative is the copyright owner. In this case, the digital file. So I actually sent pictures of the digital files and the ones that were the JPEGs that I sent them. And they're like, okay, you can register them as photographs. But it needed that explanation because mm-hmm. they don't look like photographs.
Yeah, and I think that's important for our listeners.
They're made in camera.
Yeah, exactly. That's why our listeners need to understand that these are actual photographs made in camera.
Yeah.
These aren't doctored in post-production.
And they're not paintings.
Right.
And they're not illustrations. Yeah, they were actually legitimate photographs.
Right.
You said something earlier in the segment, Jeff. You said a person may not have this in them, and that is a perspective on art or what a photograph should look like. But I know you two share common faith.
Mm-hmm.
And we spend most of our time as Christians trying to get people to understand we share faith because God loves us.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to go to beauty and art. Many of us may not appreciate it because we've never learned anything about it. And maybe that's time to do that now.
Wonderful. Yeah, let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it. We're going to be back with Jeff LeFevre and Brian Nixon here on ABQ Connect. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Pastor Scott Tom. I've been training men for ministry for 30 years. Seminary is expensive, time-consuming, and typically during the day when most of us are working. Our Shepherd School is inexpensive and only one night a week. If you desire deep theology, practical equipping, and personal mentorship, find out more information and receive a catalog and application at crossfellowship.org. That's crossfellowship.org.
Have you ever dreamt of a career in radio? Do you have a passion to serve Jesus? Well, at KLYT, we're looking to hire a few part-time board operator positions, and you could be the candidate we're looking for. As we return to normal, our need for help has only increased. Whether engineering live services from Calvary Church, assisting with production, or being involved with events, this could be your opportunity to serve in ministry, while also getting on-the-job training in radio. Shoot us your resume online at calvarynm.church/jobs.
Skip height success. You can glow in the dark.
We must never block
the glory of the Son, S-O-N, the Son of God, in all of His radiance and glory. We, by our lives, must never diminish that glow, but we should reflect that glow.
Here's more from Skip.
For us to glow, we need to go close to Jesus, grow in Him, and in fellowship with Him, in proximity to Him, getting all of that warmth and glow, then our persistence will be more impactful. You're shining as a light in a crooked world. The world is watching you. How attractive is a Christian who does this all the time? Is that effective in winning people?
Use Skip's Bible reading plan on the YouVersion app.
So we glow in the dark by living our lives differently, by speaking the truth accurately. What we exemplify with our life must be amplified by our lips.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We want to thank Ben Lucero and Indigo Mortgage for supporting the ministry of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Indigo Mortgage, 505-836-5700. That's 505-836-5700 or on the web at indigomortgage.net. Thank you, Indigo Mortgage, for your support of KLYT and ABQ Connect. Thank you, Steve Ryman, for bringing us back on the air. I guess I'm going to have to give Steve two or three more jobs because he's going to have to start recording everything we talk about off the air and then inject it throughout the show.
Right.
Because we always say really cool things that we should have recorded.
Kind of like the Monday Night Football guys who capture that great pass and then 20 seconds later they're putting it on TV.
That's exactly. Instant replay on the radio.
Yeah.
Well, I do imagine things. The best things happen when you're not live, right? It's like behind the scenes.
Well,
and
sometimes people in the studio or on the phone, they get frustrated with me because during the breaks, we're talking about something cool. And I say, wait, stop. Don't say that because
save
I need
it for
you to
the radio.
Say it on the radio.
Save it for the radio.
That's exactly right. So here's something that I want to go to because I thought it was really interesting. Brian, we are frequently talking about, from a Christian perspective, we're talking about people that are in the faith community, but you want them not just to experience the joy of God and being obedient and changing their lives and escaping bondage and sin and other kinds of things, but you want them to enjoy God's creation. Mm-hmm. You want them to enjoy fine art. Mm-hmm. And so you're constantly educating us. So you said something really interesting, Jeff. Mm-hmm. You said, sometimes Christians don't let experience happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you're really teaching us that today.
Oh, okay. Well, and art is a great place to start with experience, especially because it's something that one, if they're not familiar with being around art, their first experience with art is sometimes, I don't understand it. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't want to deal with it. Or it's not biblical. Or it's, I don't see Jesus in it. Or something like this. And so they push it away. However, there's a lot of humanness is in a lot of the art, and part of art is part of one of those things of the humanities, and we're all part of that. Mm-hmm. And God created that. And in that, we can find our own humanity as well. And so the arts are actually kind of a way of visually representing, the visual arts in particular, as what I'm talking about, since I'm a visual artist, is bringing elements of that humanness together. I always say this, okay, I met some people on a flight back from Israel. One was an artist. Unfortunately, she was saying, I just put it out there and it lives on its own when it's away I have nothing to do with it. Once it's out there, it lives its own life. And I'm like, I kind of see art as a bridge. There's this person who created it. They had an expression. They put that expression out there. Someone else sees it. They see it and pull from it from their own experience. They get ideas and they realize someone else had made that. And this becomes the bridge of communication. And it's like a dialogue if you know how to read it. So if you can learn how to read the visual arts, there's an incredible amount of humanity in that and nothing to be afraid of.
Jeff, I get the sense, I've only known you for 30 minutes, but I get the sense that
we're old buds.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I know.
A rookie like me who may not understand what you're putting together, you actually like to tell me about it. And I get the sense that if somebody wants one of your new conceptual portraits, that you would like to take them through that whole process and have them learn about that.
Well, it's a matter of – so I like to say that art can't be created without love. So in a sense, it's an expression of love. And in that, there's when you're working with somebody else, like in the case of a portrait, it's not necessarily me educating them, but it's more an invitation into the experience of the making of it. So it's less something to be frightened about as something objective outside of a person. Once they're inside the making of it, it's very understandable. And so even in the abstract, I have people who don't like abstract work or tell me they don't understand contemporary art or whatever. It seemed to somehow connect to these multimedia abstractions. There's something human in it to them that they find beautiful in the composition. They find themselves drawn to it. And then as we talk more about it, they're more like, oh, I love this stuff. And I'm thinking, maybe that's all it took was a conversation with somebody on a level that's not like I'm superior to you because I know something you don't know. But more like I know of something beautiful I want to share with you. And someone else goes, oh, I see the beauty in that. And then you start showing them other artworks and talking about it and where it came from and its histories and things like that. And it becomes extraordinarily fascinating. And yeah,
well, you mentioned,
I'm happy to help people with that. I love it.
You mentioned the bridge.
Yeah.
But I see bridges.
Yes.
I can only imagine that Brian's portrait hanging on his wall of his home is going to allow him to create a bridge between he and whoever's asking about that portrait.
Mm-hmm. Oh, unquestionably. I mean, I've already, you know, I've showed some people some preliminary, not the final work. I just got that, as I said, recently. But I've showed people the preliminary things, and they were like, wow, this is great. And then I start off with, well, this is multiple exposure. This wasn't done on the computer. And then you move to the symbolism of each piece, and then people really get interested. You know, it's interesting.
Well, it also opens the door to conversation.
Right.
I always tell folks, when you have a piece of really wonderful art on your wall, especially if it's more than just representational, like here's a landscape or something, but something that has maybe things like symbolism and things in it, this opens the door to, like, I don't understand. What is this? And you're like, oh, this is – and then the conversation starts. And after a while, you might be talking to each other just about your personal lives.
Right.
And it's not even about the art anymore. The artwork opened a door to people
to experience
one another through that piece of art.
I just want to interject, Jim. You know, you're picking up on something which I've picked up on Jeff throughout all the years is he does have a teacher knack about him. And he did spend several years as a teacher at an art college in Southern California. So he likes to educate as well as do the art. So you're picking up on the idea of that he's a great teacher.
And yet, you know what? It's not so much as just like, I want to teach you something. It's not that. It's like, I want to share something that excites me.
And it's an experience.
And it can excite you as well when you know about it. And I find most people start by not knowing about it. But once they do know about it, they want to know more about it. And they're free to go do it on their own. I don't need to be their teacher. I just am sharing something I love.
Your love and your passion for art comes through in your teaching. And that's one of the keystones, the marks of a great teacher. If they absolutely love the subject and are passionate about it, they will want to communicate it effectively.
And Jeff's art has stimulated more art in that, Brian, you've written poetry based on his art.
Yeah. So going back to the top of the program, when Jeff was explaining that, you know, this was a collaboration, and because he knew that I could do these little quick poems. And so he sent me a series of his artwork, and I literally wrote some very quick poems. And the reason why I wanted to write quick poems was because I wanted that gut immediate reaction to what I was seeing. I didn't want to have to sit down for, you know, weeks upon weeks and, you know, work on this, but I just wanted that reaction. So I'll read one, Jim. And this is the one that's under the study. So that, remember, there was work, study, and prayer. And Jeff's artwork, I'm really not in the image that you could see. What you see are a series of six panels. And what's clear in those six panels is there's five skulls. And then you see kind of an accordion component. And then in that accordion component, there's this actual poem. You don't really know that it's this poem, but you see text there. And there's other little things that I don't want to give it all away, but it's really a deep piece of artwork. But the poem is called Accordion. So, when Jeff and I were talking back and forth naming these, I just would say, well, this is skull accordion, or that's flower accordion, or something. We didn't have names for them.
Blue Brian.
Blue Brian,
yeah,
whatever.
I like that one.
So, accordion. And this is the poem. I play the notes of the people I study, bellows of air, living and dead, typewritten letters of tones sent like prayers, performance a symbol, music floating in air. And so it's a short poem, and it's really a, what we call a shape poem. If our listeners were able to see it, they would see that it kind of mimics an accordion. The shape of the poem is like an accordion. But all of the words I'm using correspond to Jeff's artwork. So there's an accordion in there. The people I study, there's skulls in there, living and dead. What you can't see in this little picture I have before me, but is actually in the artwork, is Jeff has books there in the far distance. There's a typewriter images in there. And so I brought all of these components that were in Jeff's artwork, and I constructed a shape poem.
So, Jeff, you got to do this on the radio now.
Okay.
I know you told me before we started you didn't want to get off on the weeds on some of the conceptual things you do, like big words like cuba standpoints and fragments of proximity.
But right.
I need you to play by play, if you will, what that looks like. And again, I want to point everybody to LefeverArt.com.
Okay. Or Lefever.com.
Or Lefever.com.
Right. They'll get a better – well, either one will give them a pretty clear idea of this. And another, I must also mention this, that, in the multiple exposures, it is all made in the camera, but I do choose the things that I'm going to be putting together. So the artistry of it all comes in what I choose to mix inside the camera. And sometimes it might be as many as 7 exposures, depending on it. What you mentioned about the cubist and what you mentioned about proximity. So I'd been interested in how our memory works for some time. I've had family members who had dementia and what have you. So you go through all that, and then you wonder, like, what were the value of those memories if they disappear? Or how much of a life exists without its memories? You know, these are philosophical questions, but they led me into curiosity. And a lot of the arts also is a good, healthy curiosity, and that leads you places for discovering things. And so with cubism, that happened a long time ago. I mean, that's the turn of the century, I believe, right? And so that part of that was people were challenging the idea of reality as represented in pictures. So pictures were done in perspective, usually from a single point of view. Like, I'm looking down a road, I see the trees diminish to the distance, and this is the perspective in which we form our pictures. At the time of the cubists, of course, we had a lot of science coming out. And what is reality? Reality isn't hard substances. It's all these moving molecules, nothing solid, you know, and it's like, oh, but the table's solid. But no, there's air between the molecule. And so all of a sudden it's like, well, then what is it I'm looking at, right? The cubist at one point said, well, we don't really see the world from a single point perspective. If I'm looking at a glass of water, if I'm looking at it from the top, that glass looks like a round circle. I don't see the cylinder. If I'm looking at the cylinder straight without the top, I just see a rectangle. If it has no shading, if you put shading on it, it takes a different shape. So really, that glass is not just in our eye, in our mind, it's a container. So we see in our mind that it's a container. Our brain puts it together as a container, but our eyes, our vision just say, okay, circle, cylinder, rectangle. And from different angles, it has different things. So the cubist said, well, let's just flatten all that down into space. And so a real more accurate way of looking at a thing is from all these multiple perspectives. Because nothing can be seen really from a single perspective. Not really. It's not honest. So the more honest way is this. Whether that's true or not, it's not the point. But they just changed how one broke down the pictorial plane and represented reality. And so for me, it was like, well, I wonder how we form our ideas. Do we form our ideas from a singular perspective? Or do we take a little bit of this? Like, let's take Bible study. We cherry pick this verse. We do it with that verse. We juxtapose it with this. And then we try to make sense out of it with something in our life. We put all that together. It forms a picture of what we believe. And then we go by that picture as our reality, which if we stick with that picture too long, like a graven idol image, then we fail to be in the moment. We fail to see truth as it unfolds or as it's happening because we're stuck on an image now. That's kind of the danger of it. But I started wrestling with this idea of multiple perspectives to form how we think and make ideas. So then from there it was, I'm going to do these multiple exposures then, but I'm only going to do it from things. So the camera, if I have it set to multiple exposure, if I don't shoot within a few minutes, it goes back to being a single shot. So in order for me to keep in multiple exposures, I have to shoot things that are nearby close enough to me, and that's proximity. So now if I was doing something about my experience here today in the radio show, I take a picture of Brian, take a picture of Jim, take a picture of the microphones, all on the same cell of film, all as one image. It all gets overwritten on top of each other, and now I have these different elements. So was the radio show just Brian? No. Was it just Jim? No. Was it just me? No. Was it the microphones? It was all these things in here make for this experience. And it becomes, in that cubist way, kind of a different representation. Rather than a photograph of us all sitting here as a single thing, now it's this layering of elements that all make up the image of this radio.
And it's also pictures of people sitting in Las Cruces and Albuquerque, yes, and other places around the country, might even be listening on the other side of the world,
yeah,
online.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's incredible. Right. So now you get the point. So see, you do understand art. It is not as, I mean, you are just as capable as anybody in
well,
you're going to be an artist next week. You're going to be a visual artist.
Right? No. I could stick figure, but that's about it. That's the limit to my abilities.
That's where it starts.
There we go.
That's the entryway.
Artist Jeff LaFever and Brian Nixon. Brian oversees education and publishing for Calvary Church. Of course, our listener is very familiar with Brian. He's on talking about everything from eschatology to tilting your head when you look at a photo on a wall and writing a book about it, to Beauty in the Banana, which is still I don't know if I quite get that banana taped to the wall, Brian, but we'll talk more about that when we get back. We'll be back right after these messages.
The largest investment for a family is their home. For decades, Carlos Griego and the team at Bosque Home Services has been taking care of houses. Now, here is Carlos talking with Jim Williams about some of the most common issues homeowners need to know about.
Carlos, tell us some of the common misconceptions between what maintenance is required on a refrigerated air system versus maybe a swamp cooling system.
A really common misconception with refrigerated air is that you only need to have it maintained every 3 to 4 years. Refrigerated air should be maintained every year. There's a lot of different things that can go wrong with that could be prevented, because 90% of our repairs are lack of maintenance. It's deferred maintenance. It's dirty coils.
Bosque Home Services, online at HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com or 444-7200. That's HVACAlbuquerqueNM.com or 444-7200.
As the challenges of the pandemic continue, families in poverty are facing fears. They're afraid of hunger, of eviction, but they're not afraid of hard work. When even two jobs aren't enough, they find a way for their families. But when you give to the Salvation Army, you help their hopes outpace their fears. Just $25 a month helps families fend off homelessness. Keep hope marching on at SalvationArmyUSA.org.
From the KLYT broadcast studios, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect would like to thank Essenmacher Family Dental for their support of KLYT, with services including children's dentistry, preventive dentistry, and more. Their new Albuquerque office is located at 8310 Palomas Avenue Northeast, Suite C, 505-372-0086. Or online at snmacherdental.com. Two artists in studio with me this afternoon, Jeff LaFever and Brian Nixon. Brian is focused on the written word and music, and Jeff, his medium is visual art. Brian, let's talk a little bit more about why it's important for Christians to engage in fine art.
Well, I think, you know, there's really two layers, or maybe three layers. You know, the top layer is that it's theological. You know, there's that. Then there's the aesthetic. And then there's the personal, you know, personal expression. But I think, you know, Jeff, when you and Jeff were talking early in the broadcast, you guys were hinting on this of, like, being an artist is really sort of like being,
Well, we are made in the image of God, but we're, in a sense, we're creating something out of nothing. In the true sense, God is creating ex nihilo out of nothing. But in both senses, it's thoughts made visible. So with God, you know, his thoughts, his creation, and he created all that is. And with artists, these are thoughts or ideas we have, and then we put them on paper, we, you know, photography, we paint, we write poems, we write books and all of this type of thing. So it's this idea of thoughts made visible. So that's that. Now from a large, grand, you know, biblical narrative, arts are important because God is the great artist. You know, we've heard that over and over and over, but it's true. God is the great artist. And by us engaging with the arts, we're acting like God and we're pursuing that which is beautiful or thought provoking and such of that nature. And then on the personal level, art is important for a Christian because it's a mode of self-expression. Be it they're a songwriter and they write a praise song or they write a symphony or they write a sad love song. It's all an expression of who they are as people made in God's image. So I think that tripartite way of looking at it from a theological God standpoint, looking at it from an aesthetic standpoint of creation and, you know, creating beauty, and then a personal mode of expression, all of those are important in why Christians need to engage with the arts.
You know, I'm just thinking for some reason about an art form in music that I didn't really understand for a long time, and that was the blues.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you start talking to some of the musicians that sing the blues, particularly in the day and time that we live in now, because a lot of that genre started with black musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And you start hearing their stories and you start hearing about why they're singing about these things.
And spirituals.
It's spirituals, mm-hmm. and it was done as a point of healing, you know, for their families and for other people. The other thing that they didn't want to do is people singing the blues they wanted to learn from their experience, not forget about it, not cancel the culture, even though it might have been very unpleasant to remember it.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff, you've had some success in many ways as an artist. One of your earlier paintings, L.A. Zoo, mm-hmm. had great success. Brian just showed that to me today for the first time. Over the years, though, like many artists, and maybe I should just say like all of us,
yeah,
you've had
nowadays,
yeah, ups and downs,
yeah.
And you've worked hard to keep things fresh and new. Tell us about that.
Well, that's an interesting question because you know, I don't think what can I make that is going to be new as a product that I can present. A lot of the time, like LA Zoo had great success, surprisingly, despite how it was created. It was created without any intention whatsoever. In fact, it was created after a night of going to hear Oingo Boingo play at the Whiskey in
L.A.,
yes, in Hollywood. We were and I walked out, and I was like, oh, look at this guy wearing a cheetah shirt, and this guy with his hair up in a mohawk, and I'm like, wow, it's so much like an animal. And then the next day, I just felt like painting something, and I was looking through a book of African animals, and there was a zebra, and I thought, oh, that looks like the guy I was looking at last night standing outside in the Whiskey. And I painted that zebra, but gave him a mohawk and an earring in the ear and the sunglasses. But who would have thought that that would become a symbolic image for California in the 80s?
Mm-hmm.
But it did. It caught on fire, went crazy. I had a little bit of fame that way. And it was just but it wasn't planned. And so it wasn't like, well, now what do I do next to stay on top of this? It was more, for me, it was more like, well, I'm tired of airbrushing. I want to be more expressive. In order to do that, I have to dismiss everything I learned and find a way to put emotion into it and not put an intellectual idea into a representational picture, as Brian was saying, make the thought visible. Here's an idea. Now I made it visible. Now everyone can see it. But now how do I express emotionally? Well, you can't do that in the airbrush style because it's very technical. You have to cut friskets and have to have the whole thing pre-planned and work backwards as you develop it. Well, I was thinking, I just want to emote. And so I spent 5 years de-educating myself and re-educating myself to express differently. And so a lot of the change over the year, regardless of economics, has been to become a better artist and take myself in my way of thinking. I'm like mediocre because I look at people I admire and I think, wow, they're so out of reach. And then people look at me and go, wow, he's so out of reach. You know, he's a real he's a real artist. I'm like, I'm just still trying to find my way. But it's this development that keeps pushing my art further and further and further in different genres of it and different ways of creating it through multimedia and what have you. But yeah.
Jeff, you know, I think it's important for our listeners to know is you an artist. You know,
but I also do commercial work. That's where the money has paid for that liberty. I should mention that.
Yeah.
Because it hasn't been just all blindly, you know, sitting around making stuff and not working.
But you've been a professional artist for 44 years.
Right.
And I think, I know someone, yeah. I know you. We could look at your career like many artists' career. You know, you mentioned LA Zoo of the zebra with the mohawk.
Yeah.
But then you traveled through Europe taking pictures of churches, mm-hmm. and you've done abstract expressionist work. You've really covered a full gamut, but every period is a reflection of who you are, your creative output.
I'm in all of that.
Right.
And every one of those has informed every other one of those. So my knowledge of abstraction, when I'm shooting my photographs, those photographs now, like of the churches or of the people in between churches, so that would shoot common life as I would be walking to the churches. I call this, the time and the space between grace notes. So the churches would be the grace notes, and then in between that's the life everybody lives. Yeah. And I'd be photographing that, but the compositional arrangements of those were all informed by what I learned from the painting and from the abstraction. And now it's coming full circle with the abstraction and the new photographs. I developed a way of creating that in the photograph.
But where I was going with this is you've traveled the world taking pictures of churches, and there's been various outlets of how that's come. One of my favorite outlets of your series of taking churches from around the world, mm-hmm. is Instant Icons.
Oh, yes.
Where you actually, and you, there's a book out, mm-hmm. you know, you've written three or four books and that have your art, but Instant Icons, without getting into the deep theological elements of Instant
Even
Icons.
Even I can't go that far into it.
But the idea is that Jeff has pictures of Christ in many of these images that he took with a regular camera, but then he transferred them to a Polaroid.
Instant Polaroid.
An instant Polaroid. And that has many layers of meaning and contextual meaning and theological meaning that we don't need to get in there. But just talk a little bit about, you know, your experience of taking pictures of churches around the world and then how these pictures kind of developed into different, you know, styles, if you will, of your art.
How they ended up finding themselves in different expressions from just being the photographs?
Exactly.
Well, originally it was a study on looking to find ways that art and aesthetics actually embolden and embody the theology. So from an evangelical point of view, it's sola scriptura, so it's scripture. In fact, you'd look at liturgical art and go, no. You know, no, it's liturgical, it's Catholic, it's whatever. But the truth is, these things, as in these buildings, have a way of informing somebody about God and about the Spirit, even when nobody's in the building. You can walk into this building and have this experience because it's all been set up to communicate through aesthetics and art to a person that this is a place that's been set aside for this purpose. It's a consecrated space. Mm-hmm. So my study was on consecrated space, and it started because I was wondering, where's all the art in most of the Protestant churches? And so I started, and then I found out most people didn't understand why art was even important. And I would often say to people, like, you don't think art's important, then look at advertising that's influencing your children and you. And you talk about why people aren't influenced by the church anymore, and it might be because there's no images left in the church anymore. So this is the truth, beauty, and goodness concept. So the pictures ended up being in a book about consecrated space. But in my experience at the time, I also fell upon an idea of using them as instant Polaroids, as something before the telephone. People found that they could capture moments. In fact, the selling point for Polaroid was, you know, this is how you capture these emotional moments, you know, and it's like, wow, why would you want to capture an emotional moment? Because then you don't have to remember it anymore. You can just pull out the picture, and the picture will remember it for you. But the thing with that is it only remembers 2 seconds of it. And then, you know, and so I started thinking, well, once again, here's the thing with memory. What is memory? What is a picture to that memory? And if we have a picture of something, do we cease to remember all the other elements, like the smell of the day and everything else? Do we, like, for instance, like, what do you remember in your childhood? Oh, I was riding a bike, and when I was a kid, it's one of my favorite memories. And you find out they don't remember the memory of that. They remember a photograph they saw of themselves on the bike. And that becomes their memory of their childhood. And I watched a person going through the Vatican Museum with their phone and just like taking pictures of in videos of this, of the artwork as they pass through, maybe to post on social media or something. But my thought was, this person is not in the experience of the art. He's in the experience of documenting it and broadcasting it to an audience. It's about him and where he's at right now, for whatever reason he's using it for that. But I'm thinking he's missing the real experience of being present here. And I thought, gosh, I wonder how much of that's like the church in some ways. And that's how the instant icon developed, because, you know, it used to be an icon was a living door to heaven that people, you know, treated with great reverence. And now here we have a Polaroid that's kind of like a throwaway memory. And I was wondering, like, how much maybe experiences become like that, these throwaway. Anyway, that's not going deep into it.
And I just want to point out, it's actually some of my favorite, you know, again, like any artist, he's gone through many series, many phases. But when he did that series of artwork with the Polaroids, I just thought, man, it's profound. Again, we don't have all the time to unpack it.
Well, and this is what the okay, so there's the beauty of art. You mentioned you were curious. So here's, if I have time, this will be very short. But the thing is that this instant Polaroid was a very simple idea. Here's this, and I put it in this form, and it changes it. But what makes it great is that people can unpack it almost forever with meaning and context.
Right.
And that's stuff I didn't put into it. Great art sometimes formulates that itself that way, and the artist is almost inconsequential to that if they never intended to put all that meaning. But just when you juxtapose one thing so powerful as a crucifix with something so unimpressive as a Polaroid, and you put those two together, and they have different contextual meanings, and those contextual meanings juxtapose as well, it brings things to consider.
I own the book. I also have three of the Polaroids. Still waiting for the framer to finish.
Almost a year now.
It's almost been a year. They said, oh, we'll get these two. I won't name the name of the framer, but it's a local framer.
Everybody blames everything on COVID. I can't wait till we're back.
This framer did. COVID's really set us back. But Jeff and I went. We picked out the frame. We did all of this. And I've been excited to get some original Lefevre artwork on my wall. And then it's been almost a year of waiting for this framer.
We're with Jeff Lefevre, artist, and Dr. Brian Nixon. Brian oversees education and publishing. He's also an artist himself. He will never show us his paintings, though. We'll have to talk to you, Jeff.
Oh, wait, I got to tell you, he's got a garage full. I keep saying, you got to make a book of these.
I love it. Hey, we got to take one last break, and we'll come back. And I've observed something about both of you today that I want to point out when we come back, and that is I think you both like people and like to talk to people. And that's different than some artists that I've met in the past. We'll be right back after these messages.
As the challenges of the pandemic continue, families in poverty are facing fears. They're afraid of hunger, of eviction, but they're not afraid of hard work. When even two jobs aren't enough, they find a way for their families. But when you give to the Salvation Army, you help their hopes outpace their fears. Just $25 a month helps families fend off homelessness. Keep hope marching on at SalvationArmyUSA.org.
Coming to your city this holiday season, it's Wren Collective on the Jolly Irish Christmas Extravaganza Tour. Get ready for a fun night of Christmas cheer with Wren Collective, the Jolly Irish Christmas Extravaganza, live at Calvary Church in Albuquerque, New Mexico on Friday, December 3rd. That's Wren Collective, live in Albuquerque on Friday, December 3rd. For more information, visit TransparentProductions.com.
KLYT thanks Allocate Ministries for partnering with the Light of New Mexico.
Hey, West Side, Pastor Drew here. If you are looking for a small church community plus world-class Bible teaching, I want to invite you to Calvary Church West Side. We're a family-focused Bible teaching church at Coors Montano. Calvary Church West Side, where church is family.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Want to remind everybody that Fernando Ortega, we all familiar with his art and his music form. He is going to be in concert on December 3rd at Faith Lutheran Church here in Albuquerque to benefit Johnny and Friends. That ministry is amazing in helping people with disabilities, and we're just appreciative that we have an opportunity to tell you about the concert. Tickets are available right now. Go to johnnyandfriends.org.
And our good friend Jeff LaFever has actually taken some portrait work for Fernando Ortega. And Fernando, if you're listening, you owe Jeff a barbecue.
I was just saying, can I do a shout out to Fernando and say, I haven't forgotten about that barbecue.
Yeah, no, yeah.
I mention it to Brian every time I come to Albuquerque. He's a wonderful guy.
Okay. I know both of you have been called eccentric and different things in your experience. I call both of you full-flavored individuals.
That's good. I like that description. Nice.
You guys are full flavor, but
I'm changing my website.
There you go. I've met some people that were artists that are kind of loners. They'll tolerate people to the extent that, yeah, thanks for looking at my art. But you both seem to really love people and want to be with people and make your art about their experience.
Yeah, I think from both of us, we've both been teachers. And so from my standpoint, you know, we're teachers. We've been in the classroom. We value people. And I must admit.
But I say that's more a product of who you are. You're not who you are because we're
exactly,
teachers.
Exactly. Yeah. But I will say Jeff LaFever is one of the most friendly, talkative guys. Now, I am more probably an introvert in a lot of ways. I could get on radio. I could talk in front of people. But he will just be out there in galleries or stores. We went to Old Town the other day, and he'll spend 15 minutes talking to every single person behind the counter. And I'm like looking at my watch going, we need to go. But Jeff really, truly is a friendly human being.
I like the story of on the way to Kansas City, Missouri, when we were talking with that one guy on the train. I think that made it into your book, actually.
Yeah. In my book, you know, one of the things, Jim, Jeff and I have done a lot of we've known each other for years. And we started back in California. Jeff was doing some photojournalism work with me. We met at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa. There was an artist fellowship. Jeff was attending a different church.
Well, Beth's dinner.
Yeah. And so there was a little artist fellowship, and we'd get together and read poems and talk about art, and a Christian collective of artists. And we hit it off, and we've been friends since. But we have went on many, many journeys together, from bull runs in Central California. And Jeff was the braver of us, too. He was very, very close to the bull. And he was taking pictures, and I was writing journal stories.
I got chased down.
Yeah, he got chased down.
I had to jump up the hay bale to get out of the way.
We've ridden trains across the country to go to art museums and talk about art. And so a lot of this did make it into my book, Tilt. Jeff is more in Tilt than anyone else. He's in Tilt quite a few because we've experienced a lot of journeys together.
But he also did the artwork for Beauty and the Banana.
He sure did. Yeah, Beauty and the Banana was an artwork. Now, again, the principal artwork were from two other artists. And then Jeff, through his multiple exposure photography, took these, added coloration, worked his magic in multiple exposure, and did the front cover of
that. So in a sense, it actually has three artists involved.
Yes, exactly.
I never thought about that.
Serrano, LaFever, and Catalan, you know, the artist. Yeah. And that image is the springboard, that artwork, the comedian is the springboard for that book, Beauty and the Banana.
Talk to us about the foundational factors of beauty.
Well, in Beauty and the Banana, I use Catalan's comedian as kind of the springboard to talk about beauty. And
what, do you want to tell people what that
is? Yeah, basically it made international news because he took a rotting banana and taped it to the wall. It sold for $150,000.
At the Venice Biennale, which is a major art show, international
created
art show.
Huge stir. David Dutuna, another artist, came and took it off the wall and ate it. But in my book, I use that as the springboard to talk about, well, what is beauty? And I take a very classical, you know, angle on how I view beauty. So I say there's three fundamental factors are its ontology, the fact that it is, you know, it has beauty because it is. It's a gift from God, ultimately. Secondly, it has teleology, its form, and then our understanding of its form. And then the third one, probably the most difficult, is its immutability, in its transcendence. that it really connects us back to God, you know, that type of thing. But that's a classical understanding. And in one of my sub-arguments is that beauty is objective, but in the teleological factor is subjective as well, because how I view my perception of that form may not be pretty to some. So someone may look at a Jackson Pollock with just drips in his action painting and go, that's not beautiful. My kindergarten could do that. Someone else could look at it and perceive absolute beauty. But it doesn't take away the fact that it is beautiful because it's ontologically beautiful. It is. But our understanding of its form and function, we either like it or dislike it, but it could increase with love or admiration based upon knowledge, what you guys were talking about earlier. I won't unpack all of that, but that's what Beauty and the Banana is about.
Jeff, I was going to ask you, you mentioned earlier Russian constructionist.
Constructivist.
Yes. Constructivist. Mm-hmm. And you, I got the sense when you were talking about that, that the person you were telling me about maybe off the air didn't like that artwork because they maybe didn't bring them warm, fuzzy feelings. Mm-hmm. So art isn't always intended to make us feel happy and joyful.
No. No, it's not at all. I mean, there are different perceptions. One of the perceptions is I know what I like, and so I like what I like, and that's the one. But a lot of art's not beautiful, so it's not easily liked. A lot of it might have concepts behind it. It might be tied to, in that case, it was tied to a very oppressed time in Russia where a lot of artists were underground. And in order for them to survive, they still did their work and what have you. But it's, and you might find, you know, you might find beauty in the struggle right there for some people, that something can emerge out of such an oppressive environment. Or art might have this very ugly appearance because it's talking about a topic that's very ugly. And to make it beautiful would to sentimentalize it. Mm-hmm. And so in order to try to make it more truthful in a way, let's put it, if we can use that word, in this regard, then sometimes you paint it in such a way that to reflect that ugliness. And in that, if it's really done well, it can be very beautiful if it connects to it.
And I think one of the most beautiful.
Well, it's like seeing a photograph of that one. Oh, who was it? From Nagasaki or with the bombs and the.
And Hiroshima?
I'm trying to think.
Oh, Smith.
It was Eugene Smith.
Eugene Smith.
Eugene Smith has a. It was from chemicals. It was from chemicals from a factory, I think, as well, not a bomb. But it's a Japanese
mother
holding her child who's been contorted from the chemicals. Not a pretty picture, but it's so beautiful. Her love for the child can be so appreciated from this image.
Yeah.
And yet, such a difficult topic. But then people who have had such difficulties can relate to it, and that love can be understood. And in that sense, it becomes a beautiful picture.
I think the ultimate example is Christ.
Well, there you go.
You know, the ultimate example is the ugliness of the cross, but the beauty that is manifest there. What Jeff gave us with Eugene Smith is a great, very human-centric way, but Christ is the ultimate example of beauty that's came out from a hideous, ugliest situation.
Jeff, how can someone interested in your art learn more about it and get a hold of you?
Best way is to go to LefevreArt.com. And in this case, specifically that one, because as they go there, there will be a newsletter pop-up. And they can just put in their name and their email, and they'll be on my newsletter. And they'll be getting all kinds of information.
And there's an opportunity for them to maybe commission you for
multiple
exposure portrait.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I welcome it.
Brian, where's your hanging?
The
rolled up on a table.
The instant icons are at a framer here in town. I won't name names. We're waiting. I was hoping it would be on the wall when Jeff showed up. But the portrait he did of me, the work study prey, I literally just got. So it's still on my table.
Jeff, what a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, Jim. Likewise.
Thank you so much for spending the time with us. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Jim. A pleasure as always.
Is presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling, 505-444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KLYT,
The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of staff or management at KLYT. If you missed any or part of today's show, the podcast can be found at abqconnect.online.